Okay, the family who lived under the bridge. Chapter 1. Once there was an old hobo named Armand who wouldn't have lived anywhere but in Paris. So that is where he lived. Everything that he owned could be pushed around in an old baby buggy without any hood, so he had no worries about rents or burglars. All the ragged clothing he owned was on his back, so he didn't need to bother with trunks or dry cleaners. It was easy for him to move from one hidey hole to another, so that was what he was doing late one morning in December. It was a cold day with the gray sky hanging on the very chimney pots of Paris. But Armand did not mind because he had a tickly feeling that something new and exciting was going to happen to him today. He hummed a gay tune to himself as he pushed his buggy through the flower market at the site of Notre Dame Cathedral. The flowers reminded him that someday it would be spring, even though it was not a bad winter yet. There were pots of fragile hyacinth and tulips crowded together on planks in front of the stalls. There were pink carnations and oleanders in great tin pails. Most of all, there were bouquets of red beaded holly clumps of white pearled mistletoe and little green fir trees, because soon it would be Christmas. Armand's keen eye caught sight of a pile of broken branches and wilted flowers swept away from one stall. Annabelle was the name written over the stall, and Armand touched his black beret to the stocky woman whose work apron hung below her woolly coat. "By your leave and in gratitude for your generosity, madame," he said to the woman, who surely must be Annabelle. He piled the broken branches on top of his belongings in the baby buggy. Then he fastidiously picked a sprig of dried holly from the litter and pulled it through the torn buttonhole on the lapel of his coat. He wanted to look his best for whatever gay adventure was waiting for him that day. The woman, who must have been Annabelle, only frowned at Armand as he trundled his buggy towards the Rue Corse. Past the ancient buildings he shuffled, his buggy headed for the far branch of the Seine River. But as he entered the square in front of Notre Dame, a hand grasped his arm from behind. "Your fortune, monsieur," wheedled the musical voice. "You will meet with an adventure today." Armand let go of the handle of the buggy and whirled around to face a gypsy woman in a short fur coat and full flowered skirt. He gave her a gap-toothed smile. "You, Morelli," he greeted her. "Your people are back in Paris for the winter?" The gypsy woman's dark face beamed under the blue scarf. "Doesn't one always spend winters in Paris?" she asked, as if she were a woman of fashion. "But you have taken to the streets so early?" Armand shrugged his shoulders under the long overcoat that almost reached his ankles. "It's back under the bridge for me," he answered. "I've had enough of the crowded corners and tight alleys of the Place Maubert, and I'm tired of sorting rags for that junk dealer. I am ready for that adventure that you promised me." Morelli could understand. "That courtyard we rent seems like a cage after the freedom of the long winding road," she said. "But the men have found plenty of work for the winter. A city with as many restaurants as Paris has more than enough pots and pans to be mended. Of course, the children can talk of nothing but the fields and the woods of spring." "I can't abide children," grumped Armand. "Starlings they are, witless, twittering little pests." Morelli shook her finger at him. "You don't think you like children," she said, "but it is only that you are afraid of them. You are afraid the sly little things will steal your heart if they find you have one." Armand grunted and took the handle of his buggy again. Morelli waved him away, swaying on bare feet squeezed into tarnished silver sandals. "If you change your mind about the bridge, you can come live with us," she invited. "We're beyond the hails. where they're tearing down the buildings near the old Court of Miracles. Armand tramped under the black leafless trees and around the cathedral by the riverside without even giving a glance. In the green park behind the flying buttresses, some street urchins were loitering. Two of them played at dueling, while a third smaller one watched, munching a red apple. The swordsmen holding out their imaginary swords circled each other. Closer and closer they came with clenched fists. Then the boys forgot their imaginary swords and began punching each other. They stopped their play as Armand went by. "Look at the funny old tramp," one cried to his playmates. Armand looked around because he wanted to see the funny old tramp too. "It must be that droll Luis with his tall black hat and baggy pants." Then he realized he was the funny old tramp. "Keep a civil tongue in your head, starling," he ordered. He fingered the holly in his lapel. "If you don't, I'll tell my friend, Father Christmas, about your rude manners. Then you'll get nothing but a bunch of sticks like the ones in my buggy." The boys looked at him in awe. Father Christmas is the Santa Claus of France. He rides down from the north on his little gray donkey and leaves presents for good children. The small boy held out his half-eaten apple. "Are you hungry, monsieur? Would you like the rest of my apple?" But the biggest boy mockingly punched the air with his fist. "Poof," he scoffed. "There's no Father Christmas. He's just make-believe." "If you doubt my words," said Armand with dignity, "just look in the Louvre store. You'll find him in the mezzanine floor." He grinned like one of the roguish gargoyles on the cathedral. There really was a Father Christmas, and it was his friend Camille, who felt the urge to work when the weather turned cold. "I believe you, monsieur," said the boy with the apple. "I saw Father Christmas outside the store yesterday. He was eating hot chestnuts on the street." Armand hunched his shoulders and quickly walked towards the bridge. Morelli was right. These starlings would steal your heart if you didn't keep it hidden. And he wanted nothing to do with children. They meant homes and responsibility and regular work. All the things he turned his back on so long ago, and he was now looking for adventure. Down a few blocks was a bridge under which he lived when the weather wasn't too raw, and plenty of company he had during the summer with all the homeless of Paris staking their claim to this space or that. "But first I must have dinner," he told himself, looking up at the restaurant across the street. He licked his thumb and held it up. "Ah, the wind is just right," he decided. So he parked his buggy beside the low wall and settled himself in the breeze that came from the restaurant. He pulled all the kitchen smells deep into his lung. "Ah, steak broiled on charcoal," he gloated, "and the sauce is just right." But they scorched the potatoes. For 2 hours, Armand sat on the curb enjoying the food smells, because that is the length of time a Frenchman allows himself for lunch at midday. Then he daintily wiped his whiskered lips with his cuff and rose on knobby shoes. "And just keep the change, waiter," he said generously, although there wasn't a white uniformed waiter in sight. "You'll need it for Christmas." He started down the step that dropped from the street to the quay beside the Seine. He bounced the back wheels of the buggy down each step. "I am really quite stuffed," he told himself, "but I wish I had taken that apple. It would have been just the right dessert after such a rich lunch." Down the quay, he pushed the buggy towards the bridge tunnel that ran along the shore. On the cobbled quay, a man was washing his car with the free Seine water. A woman in a fur coat was airing her French poodle. A large barge, sleek as a black seal, slid through the water. It was like coming home after a long absence, thought Armand, and anything exciting could happen under a Paris bridge. As he neared the tunnel, his eyes widened with surprise and anger. A gray canvas was propped over the niche he had always called his own, and a market pushcart was parked by the pillar. He raced his buggy across the cobblestones towards the arch. When he arrived there, he reached up and angrily tore down the canvas with one swoop of his arm. Then he jumped back in surprise and horror. Ooh la la, he cried, starlings, a nest full of them, because there were three startled children snuggled into a worn quilt, looking up at him with eyes as surprised as his own. The little girl and the boy cowered deeper into the quilt, but the older girl quickly jumped to her feet. She had direct blue eyes, and they matched her determined chin and snub-nosed and brilliant red hair. You can't take us away, she cried, clenching her fist. We're going to stay together because we're a family, and families stick together. That's what Mama says. End of chapter one.